here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, this afternoon they're going to be the views of William Grigg, certainly one of our favorite guests. And we're going to be talking about, what are we going to be talking about today, William?
Dr. Stan, I don't see how we can avoid talking about the economy some more, primarily because it's the motor that governs or that propels every other issue, and also because there's a concerted effort underway, I think, to distract the public from what they need to know regarding the economy. And I think the most salient fact that we have to recognize, and people will realize this perhaps on an instinctive level, if not on an intellectual level, when they go to the gas pump or when they go to the checkout line of the supermarket, the salient fact is that we're dealing with the loss in value of the U.S. dollar of 20% over the last half year. That's something that's happening in real time. In real time, we are seeing the repudiation of the dollar as a store of value, and we're seeing the dollar lose its primacy as the world's reserve currency. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say that we should talk about that in the past tense. The dollar has lost its position as the world's reserve currency. One illustration of that is found in an AP article that just hit the wires about 3 hours ago. And I want to read just the first part of the lead here. Antique store owners and lower Manhattan ticket vendors at India's Taj Mahal and Brazilian business executives heading to China all have one thing in common these days. They don't want U.S. dollars. Hit by a free fall with no end in sight, the once mighty U.S. dollar is no longer just crashing on currency markets and making life more expensive for American tourists and business people abroad. Its clout is evaporating worldwide as foreign businesses and individuals turn to other currencies. Experts say the bleak U.S. economic forecast means it will take years for the greenback to recover its value and prestige. I want to interject here. That's not going to happen. We're dealing with something completely different from previous dollar shocks, I believe. And then to continue with the story, negative dollar sentiment is growing in nations where the dollar was historically accepted as equal to or better than local currency. And dollar aversion is even extending to some quarters in the United States. And it talks about how at the Taj Mahal, where the dollar was considered to be as good as or better than the rupee, people are being encouraged now to use dollars. In Bolivia of all the countries in the world, there are billboards where you see the image of George Washington on the $1 bill next to a bright pink 500 euro note encouraging savers to turn away from the dollar and to embrace the euro as a store of value. If the dollar is going down, save it in euros, say the sign. And in neighboring Brazil, people are stocking up on Chinese yuan currency as opposed to the dollar. That doesn't surprise me because there have been huge business deals signed between Brasilia and Beijing, and that's one of the things that caught my eye 4 or 5 years ago is the way that China was using soft power diplomacy, business deals, trade negotiations, things of that sort, to build up alliances in the Western Hemisphere. Brazil is resource rich. They're just lousy with resources, as a matter of fact. China, of course, is the world's factory floor. They've got not only the huge resource deals going on between Brazil and China, but they've also got joint space ventures as well. And so it doesn't surprise me that Brazil is turning more and more toward the Chinese currency and away from the dollar. But what this tells me is that it is a done deal. The dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency. It's lost, if you'll excuse me for using the Chinese expression, the mandate of heaven. It's no longer looked upon as a store of value. It's no longer looked upon as the key that will open every door. And it's interesting that this has happened just as soon as there was a credible alternative fiat currency to challenge it, the euro. And when, over the course of 6 months, you see a 20% loss in the value of the dollar and an accelerating decline, it's clear that we're headed for hyperinflation. Not merely inflation, but hyperinflation that will build on itself geometrically. And so there are some really, really bad times immediately ahead.
And I certainly agree with you, and we're going to be back here in just a moment with William Grigg as we begin to analyze why it is that the Federal Reserve System is doing everything they can to destroy the dollar rather than trying to preserve it. We'll be right back.
As the old saying goes, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you give him a Berkey system, you give him the ability to obtain purified water for a lifetime. This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget. And more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount, but in one stop, you can get gifts for the entire family. That's BerkeyWater.com or call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Honey, I'll be right back.
Brittany, your husband looks so good tonight.
I just worry about his high blood pressure. He gets uptight so easily.
I know. My Gary has high blood pressure and high cholesterol. I always think about the what if.
Yeah.
Ladies, you need to get your husband's Cocoa Pure chocolate tea.
Chocolate tea?
That sounds delicious.
The information is all over the news. Cocoa without the high fat and an extract from red wine are both shown to have heart benefits, including supporting healthy blood pressure and cholesterol levels.
See, I told you chocolate was good for us.
To try Cocoa Pure risk-free, call 1-800-457-9914. Cocoa Pure contains a red wine extract and pure cocoa, and is natural and healthy for anyone. Cocoa Pure is especially recommended for those with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or a family history of heart disease. Call now for your delicious risk-free trial. Call 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914.
Stan of the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is William Grieg, talking about what's happening financially. If you go to Europe today, the European central banks and central banks over in Europe, because they're separate. Each country still has a central bank. They have a European central bank, but they're holding their interest rates. They want to fight inflation, and if their economy slows down a little bit, so much would so be it. Actually, our Federal Reserve System is loaning massive amounts of money to the central banks of Europe. Now, where's the money that the Federal Reserve is loaning coming from? They're simply creating out of nothing. And here in the United States, they're creating money out of nothing. They're lowering the interest rates. They're massively expanding the amount of money that's out there and coming up with, half $1 trillion here and a few $100 billion there. And what they're doing is depauching our currency. Why would they do that? The purpose of the Federal Reserve System is to preserve the stability of the American dollar. But they're not doing it, are they?
Nope. They were never intended to. I mean, that's how they were sold to the public in the early years of the late century as a means of preventing exactly what we're seeing right now, which is a slow-motion bank run combined with the persistent debauching of our currency. When the dollar's value plummets, one-fifth in the course of half of a year, you're dealing with something that is immensely destabilizing to a society. Just once again, in the last couple of days, we've seen all these auguries of really bad economic times to come. We had oil trading at over $111 a barrel. We had gold cresting over $1,000 an ounce for the first time in history, although in inflation-adjusted terms, it's still got about 2.5 times that amount to go before it'll set a real dollar-consistent record in terms of the price per ounce. Not many people have noticed, but over the last quarter or so, the Dow Jones has shed about 2,000 points in spite of everything that the Dow Jones, or rather the Federal Reserve, has been doing to try to keep the Dow Jones inflated. It's got a long way to fall, and it's going to fall. It's coming down in sort of a controlled descent. I mean, the market, the stock market, the Dow, might have a soft landing, but everywhere else the economy is crashing. You're seeing new records being set in housing markets all across the country for repos and for the decline in equity on the part of so-called homeowners. You had housing riots in Boca Raton, Florida in the last couple of days. People are looking for housing vouchers. They became so agitated, did the crowd, that they actually had SWAT teams out in order to calm people down. And just over the last 24 hours, the Fed has announced yet another innovative way of debauching our currency by lending money to the banks, and that's the so-called $200 billion loan facility that was announced as a way, once again, of trying to keep the investment community at least somewhat optimistic about what's going on with the economy. It really didn't take that much. It didn't really take with the investment community. But as you say, our banks are debauching the dollar while the European Central Bank is holding somewhat firm against inflation. And so the logical conclusion we have to draw here is that it is the policy of our central bank to try to level us down to the general level of what the European Socialist European Union has created in the Eurozone. We're seeing the relentless downward harmonization of America's standard of living. Back in 1979, Paul Volcker, who was then the head of the Federal Reserve, made a horrifying comment. I remember it vividly. I was in high school at the time, and we were dealing with the beginnings of, or not the beginnings, rather, 1979, we were dealing with the full-blown effects of the Carter stagflation. And Paul Volcker was saying, well, the standard of living of the American citizen is going to have to go down further. And that was something that terrified me at the time, that this person I'd never heard of and who was one that wasn't accountable to me was trying to define what my standard of living was going to be. Well, we're seeing that happening right now, even though Ben Bernanke is not being as candid as Volcker was. If you take a look right now at these massive amounts of so-called money being ex-nihilated by the Federal Reserve, being conjured into existence out of nothing, that's all being stolen from your checking account, from your savings account, from every paycheck that you earn. The Federal Reserve is stealing the value of that money. It is worth less and less with every passing minute, every passing hour. And so you are seeing a form of redistribution here out of the sweat of your labor, out of the undertakings that you engage in order to provide for your family. That value is being stolen from you and redistributed in a way that the Fed sees fit. And I believe that the logical outcome of this will be not only the destruction of the dollar as the world reserve currency, which is a fait accompli, that's already been done. I honestly think that within a couple of years, our country is going to be so economically straitened and so desperate to find some way of dealing with our outstanding obligations that the government has arranged for our benefit, that we're going to see the abdication of the dollar, we're going to see the dollar done away with, and we're going to see a new currency as a means, perhaps, of trying to reboot the economy. There's been some discussion about a new currency unit called the Amero, which would be a currency of a tripartite North American Union of the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And you know, what better way to set the stage for the Amero than by destroying the value of the dollar and simply claiming that we have to switch currencies, switch some kind of to some kind of a currency that would be backed, presumably, by the resources and financial clout of this new political configuration. I think that's something that we should start discussing right now as a real possibility and start making plans as to what we are going to do in order to stop that, and failing to stop that, what we will do in order to deal with the consequences.
And I think another possibility, though, perhaps as an interim step, would be to have a two-tiered currency, one
yeah.
for the United States and an entirely different one for all those $3 trillion or more dollars that are overseas. And, of course, we've been exporting our inflation for a long period of time, not having to really see the ravages of inflation here as we've exported inflation to other countries. But there are at least $3 trillion out there, and that the rate we're going now, lending money to the European Central Banks, lending money to Credit Suisse, the second largest bank in Switzerland. We just gave them $20 billion a few weeks ago, and now to the European Central Bank. We're giving money all out. Pretty soon it'll be $3.5 or $4 trillion, and of course there's nothing behind that. And then, of course, if they want to come in here and buy up things, suddenly they can't spend those external dollars. And that's one of the tricks I've seen used over and over again in countries where you have a two-tiered system. You have one, a domestic currency, and then you have your currency circulating throughout the rest of the world. The only trouble is, if you can't buy anything with it, how long are people going to want to hang on to it? How long will it have any value?
Yeah, like you said, that would be an interim step. It would have to be a transitional step between where we are and someplace else that we're going. And I can see that perhaps becoming a possible policy option that would be used sometime in the next couple of years. But quite frankly, if the rate that a decline is happening, they would have very little time in order to go from that step, or go from where we are to that step before going to another step to deal with the absolute destruction of the value of the dollar. There's a wonderful writer on policy and economic affairs whose blog has a title I can't repeat in polite company, unfortunately, who pointed out that basically there are two choices confronting us right now, the first of which is to deal with the pain that will be occasioned by the necessary general fall in prices that we call a depression. You know, let a lot of big concerns go out of business, absorb the financial and economic and social consequences of that type of a contraction. That's the one option. The other option is just to see the complete destruction of the value of our medium of exchange. And it's clear that the powers that be have chosen the second course. And that's the one that will cause a lot more injury and a lot more widespread harm to those of us who have to make a living than the former course. And so it's clear to me that within a very short time horizon, we're likely to see the wholesale demolition of the dollar. And when that happens, they're going to have to find some other way of keeping this vast machinery of redistribution and regimentation afloat. And I suspect that they're going to have to move to some other kind of a currency, whether that's the two-tiered currency you're describing or a wholly new currency altogether. That's probably where we're going to end up in the early years of the next decade.
Well, I think, you know, of course, if you read Alan Greenspan's book, The Age of Turbulence, he quotes Lenin as saying there is no better way to destroy a capitalist nation than to debauch its currency. And not one person in a million will understand what's happening. And that's the great tragedy. Most people really have no idea what's going on today, but they are debauching and destroying our currency. And they're doing it intentionally, not by accident, but by intent.
Yeah, and like you say, it's because illusion is king. People have to become disillusioned with all the pain that entails before they'll be able to live in reality, as we have no choice but to experience it. We're in for a really big dose of reality very soon.
I agree with you totally, and of course I'm very, very concerned that so many of the people who worked hard all of their lives, saving their money, looking forward to retirement, why, you may very well get your retirement, your Social Security. You may get $1,500, $2,000 a month. But, of course, if a loaf of bread is $2,000, it's not going to buy you very much.
Yeah, and lest it be thought that you're being hyperbolic, take a look once again at Zimbabwe, where you literally have to be a millionaire in order to go out to McDonald's. I mean, the price of a hamburger in Zimbabwe is measured in the millions of Zimbabwean dollars, which is why they're printing up million-dollar Zimbabwean notes, and they're becoming worthless practically by the time they fall off the printing press.
You know, I read the most incredible thing. The current rate of inflation in Zimbabwe is 100,000% a year, 100,000% a year. And remember, that's the government that was installed by the American State Department.
Yes. That was their foreign handiwork, and we're likely to have a taste of that domestically as well, because it's the same program. And I wish that, once again, we could somehow get people to understand that unless they take action right now, before they're given permission by our government to take action in terms of trying to pay down debts, become materially somewhat self-sufficient, and try to move some of their savings into something other than Federal Reserve notes, unless they take those actions right now, by the time they're given official permission to do so, it'll probably be too late. And take a look at what's going on, once again, in the precious metals market. Take a look at what's going on in the oil market. One of the reasons why oil is peaking so high is not just the decrease in the value of the dollar, but the fact that people are fleeing out of the dollar and trying to put their investment dollars somewhere into a better store of value. Now, petroleum is a better store of value right now than the dollar. Indeed, if you understand the mechanics of how the petrodollar works, that's all that's been backing the dollar.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are reclaimable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a two-pack for only $99 or a four-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Hi, John Huebner from Midas Resources. Are you tired of watching your hard-earned assets dwindle away? As government spending is out of hand and the Federal Reserve is creating in excess of $20 billion a week, are you tired of stockbrokers gambling away your hard-earned money? Is this market a setup for a crash greater than 1987? Too many of today's policies resemble those that led to the collapse of 1929. How much are you willing to lose? Take action now. Call me at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129. I believe that we are facing a financial catastrophe of biblical proportion. Over recent decades, numerous economic systems have failed. Current Federal Reserve policy and uncontrolled government spending have set the stage for the United States to be the next target. Secure your assets today by calling 1-800-686-2237, extension 129. Do this while paper can still buy gold. Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Tourme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and of course our guest is William Grieg, and we're talking about really what's happening to the economy. And certainly, you only need to look and see what's happening. to the prices. They tell us we have a core inflation rate of 2.1%, and maybe if you take in food and fuel, well, you're going to be up to 3.5% or 4.1%. And they're simply lying. They know they're lying. They have calculated a new way of rating inflation, and they call it hedonics. And hedonics is a term that is simply a cover for simply deceiving the American people. And they figured that the price of beef goes up. Well, people aren't going to eat it. They're going to eat chicken. So, see, there's no real inflation.
Mm-hmm.
How can you make these assumptions? And then, of course, they don't include medical costs. They don't include buying homes. They don't include so many things where the real costs are. But I want to tell you, they have the knee pads for hockey players included in that, and they haven't gone up significantly. You go right ahead and pick up the story there, William.
Yeah, it's really interesting, the eccentric metrics that are used in order to deny the reality we have to live with. And one of the remarkable things we're seeing here is that at the same time that we can see a rapid decline in the value, the price of housing, while that's going down, we're seeing the consumer price index go up. And of course, as mentioned, that is one of the factors that they take out of the consumer price index is the cost of housing. But still, that's the sort of a trend line here that, given the nature of our consumer economy as it's developed and nurtured to develop over the last 5 or 6 years, that's very, very dangerous, because the one thing that's kept the American consumer afloat has been this inflated housing market and the ability of people to use their homes as ATMs in order to fuel their spending and also to consolidate their consumer debt with regularity. And I remember vividly, and this is something we brought up before, and it just goes to show how pernicious the people are who are managing the system. Back in, I believe it was 2004, just as the Fed stopped this series of reducing the prime rate and bringing down the interest rates that people would be paying for mortgages. When adjustable rates were going down, getting an adjustable rate mortgage was a good deal. But then after they'd reached the level as low as they could go, Alan Greenspan urged American consumers to go out and take out another adjustable rate mortgage when they could only go one direction, and that would be up. He knew what would happen. He knew that people would get caught upside down as their interest rates climbed and their equity would go down. And of course, right now we've got millions of people who are upside down with homes that they couldn't get rid of if they wanted to. If they wanted to get out of their mortgages, they couldn't do it because they couldn't get out of their homes what they owe for them. And the same thing is happening with automobiles as well. That's another subprime market that's starting to collapse. But this is the same Alan Greenspan who did his level best, and it was a formidable level best, to destroy the value of the dollar. And then he went over to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, just a couple of weeks ago at an investors conference, and urged Arab investors, including the sovereign wealth funds and the governments that have pegged their currencies to the dollar, to get out of the dollar. So, like you say, this is something that is being done with malicious premeditation. They know the consequences for our standard of living, and those consequences are now starting to become very obvious. And people now have gotten to a point where they're paying attention to the economy, but nothing like the conscientiousness they should display. I mean, I don't know why people aren't panicked. This is a perfect time to panic. And I think that the key here, once again, is to lower your debt obligations, become as solvent as possible, get out of dollars to the extent possible, and to make yourself somewhat physically self-sufficient in terms of your basic necessities, because we're in for some really nasty price shocks. We're already feeling the price shocks, and this is just the beginning of sorrows.
I certainly agree with you, and I think that people have to really understand that if the dollar loses its value, everything we buy is going to go up. Right now, of course, an awful lot of the big rigs that are carrying produce to our stores, they're parking them. They can't afford the price of diesel. It's up over $4 a gallon. There's no reason for that. It should be the lowest of all the fuel costs, but they jacked the price of that up. And we're beginning now, of course, as the price of fuel goes up, the price of transportation goes up, the price of the products in the grocery store goes up, and they insist we've only got a 2% inflation. And that old adage we've used so many times, you're going to believe the government, you're going to believe your lying eyes. You better understand that Ben Bernanke, when he goes before the Senate, as he did, I think it was on the 27th of February, and he said, "We've looked at the statistics. There is no inflation."
Yeah.
He's frankly lying.
Yeah, and that was the same appearance where he mentioned quite briefly, oh, by the way, there will probably be some bank failures, which should have been a, you know, 46-point type screaming headline in every newspaper of the country. Fed chairman says there are going to be bank failures. But when you talk about the grounding of the big rigs and the implications that has for our retail food market, that's one of the reasons I say get physically self-sufficient to the extent that you can.
Amen to that. We're going to be back in just a moment with William Grigg right here at Genesis.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, trucks stop running and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest William Grigg. And William, before we go on, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your blog spot, how they can get in touch with your book?
I certainly would, and appreciate that. My blog is entitled Pro Libertate, that means for freedom in Latin, and I try to publish something new on there between 3 and 5 times a week, depending upon my schedule. The easiest way to find my blog is to go through the website of The Right Source. And the address for that is www.rightsourceonline.com. That's one word. Once again, it's rightsourceonline.com. That's the homepage of the Welch Foundation. It's a news site where we have news stories and commentaries and links to articles of what we consider to be very significant interest. If you look at the top of the page, there's a banner advertisement for my new book, which is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. That came out a couple of months ago. It's about 300 pages long, and there are several hundred endnotes documenting the story I tell, which is the story of our beginning descent into a garrison state in which the purpose of our law enforcement community would be to protect the government from the people rather than to protect the people from the crimes of the lawless. Now, we used to have a system in which the local police were locally accountable, in which they were a conspicuous presence for the purpose of protecting the rights and the property of the innocent. And there are many, many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of conscientious police officers who remember that principle, and they try to act on it. Unfortunately, the system itself has changed. The assumptions now are thoroughly militaristic. The mindset is thoroughly militaristic. They're, for all intents and purposes, an asset of the Pentagon. That's something I document in the book. There are programs that assume that if your law enforcement agency, be it a police department or a sheriff's department, wants to get military surplus hardware, or not even surplus hardware, just brand new first issue military hardware, that you can do so because you're pretty much, for all intents and purposes, a Pentagon agency. That program is called the Law Enforcement Support Organization, or LESSO. I document in the book the role that that plays in militarizing the police, which is a horrible, horrible development. That's something our founding fathers would not have put up with. And the book is available through the Right Source website. You can click through that banner ad and get ordering information. And if you go down a little bit on the website, about a third of the way down the page, look at the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see my photograph, and you can click on the link that will take you to my Pro Libertate blog. And the purpose of that blog is to do what I can, quite frankly, to alarm people, because I think people are way too complacent and torpid as we're seeing our country in real time being turned from the imperfect but commendable republic it used to be a generation ago into something worse than any of the banana republics I lived in Central America. And that's a series of events, a development that has left me aghast and mortified. And I know that the same is true of you. And hopefully people will become not only sorrowful but angry, and angry enough to do something through whatever influence that you and I and others like us have.
Well, we keep working at it just as long as we can, as long
exactly.
as God gives us breath, and as long as we're not rounded up and put in those concentration camps. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there really are concentration camps out there. If you'd like to see pictures of them, we have a DVD entitled America Behind Barbed Wire. We have a concentration camp special with DVDs and videos and documentation even from the government about their plan for the use of civilian inmates in army camps. So anyway, of course, let's get back to the situation as far as the finances are concerned, because of course we know what happened. You know, it was the time of the Great Depression, and Franklin Delano mm-hmm. Roosevelt, to be more responsible, did away, cut back 50% on the veterans' pensions at that time. Now, remember, mm-hmm. these are the people that fought in the First World War. They've been promised pensions. They've been promised a bonus. And, of course, they just cut that back in the name of 50% of your disability payments. We've got to save money. The government doesn't have money. And then, of course, the veterans organized. They marched on the White House. And the Army was there. And they killed the leaders of that. They just shot them down like dogs. And people have forgotten those things happened in times of financial distress during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
You wonder if they're planning on that same thing happening again.
Well, we do have a set of circumstances that would conduce to a second bonus march. And I don't think that that would be a very appetizing spectacle, but I do think that we're in for a lot of unedifying spectacles of that sort, unfortunately. I mentioned this riot that just took place in Boca Raton, Florida, over housing vouchers. When times get tough and people start feeling the cold, clammy hand of physical necessity clutching at their vitals, they start to do things that are irrational. Whether that irrationality takes the form of a somewhat romantic but doomed march on Washington demanding that you be paid what you've been promised, on the one hand, or takes the form of voting for a demagogue on a white horse who's promised that he'll provide you with freedom, work, and bread, as the Germans did during their hyperinflationary depression. That's the sort of thing that, once again, comes to the fore in terms of in times of the sort that we're facing right now. And it doesn't help that we have a system now that is thoroughly oligarchical and very feudalistic, in the sense that there is a very strong and definable cleavage between the ruling overclass and the rest of us. I was just taking a look at a report that was put up by the Center for Responsive Politics about this aristocratic class that is our political leadership today. The median, the over under. The median net worth of the senators today, the 100 people in the U.S. Senate, which I consider to be the most corrupt political deliberative body in history, the median value net worth of senators is $1.7 million. That means that there are as many above that as there are beneath that line. For the House of Representatives, which is supposed to be the body that represents the public at large, the voice of the plebeian classes, to use the Roman terminology, the median net worth is $675,000. Part of this is, of course, because you have to be wealthy in order to run for political office anymore, but also part of it's because people in positions of political power are looking out for their own interests and the interests of people of that cohort. They make an annual salary of $169,000, which is by no means chump change, even when we're looking at the debasement of the FRNs that were being paid. But this is the stat that leapt off the page at me. Between 2004 and 2006, so that 2 years, very recently, that two-year period that ended 2 years ago, the net worth of the average member of the House of Representatives, the average senator, increased 84%. Now, that's not true of the typical American household. Those of us who are on the receiving end of the decisions which are being made in Washington saw our net worth decline. And we also saw that, in real terms, our wages declined during the same period, while, of course, Congress has been voting itself rather luxurious pay increases. So we're seeing the emergence, once again, of something that is, I would say, very feudalistic in terms of the separation that's being made between those who are well-connected and politically influential and those who are on the receiving end of their decisions. And that's the sort of a thing, once again, that drives the kind of frictions and that creates the kind of frictions and generates the kind of animosities that lead to widespread social turmoil when the economy takes a belly turn and we end up with people who are feeling a certain desperation for the basic necessities of life. We've not had that type of a situation here in the United States for a long, long time. The Great Depression is something that is being remembered by a diminishing number of people in our country. My father and mother are both children of the Depression. They have a lifestyle and values which reflect the virtues of austerity and thrift and discipline, maintaining a good credit rating, paying what you owe on time or before, having modest desires with respect to the acquisition of material wealth and things of that sort, and doing without in order that future generations can be a little bit better off. That's the ethic they were brought up with. And now we have a culture-wide epidemic of a completely incontinent desire for immediate gratification. That we have the desire for immediate gratification and deferral of responsibility, whereas the people of the Depression era learned the virtue of immediate exercise of responsibility and deferral of gratification. And so in that circumstance, where you have people who are so thoroughly besotted with materialism, and you have a sudden deprivation of the means of indulging their every whim, we have that element put in a very volatile mix here when the economy turns bad. And so we're likely to see some really concentrated ugliness emerge here as the economy takes a southward turn.
And, you know, one of the things that really is so interesting and really rather frightening is that there are a number of people out there who took out loans on their houses that really could afford to pay. Now, certainly the people with subprime loans really never could have afforded those homes. Mm-hmm. They never should have bought them. The Alt-A, which is sort of halfway between the AAA and the subprime mortgages, those are people who are sort of borderline, and a lot of them are in trouble. But a lot of the people, you know, have responsible jobs and really have a fairly good income, are in trouble as well as far as their home mortgages are concerned, because as the price of property drops in many parts of the country, these people find that they're paying, you know, a mortgage payment on a home that's worth less than the mortgage for it. And so some of these people, you know, especially as the price continues dropping, they're already beginning just to walk away from those homes, and then they leave them to the banks. The banks have no choice but to sell them. If nobody wants to buy, they have to keep dropping the price. And this is then driving the prices of houses down literally all over America, although some areas, certainly here in California and Stockton, Modesto, Northern California, San Diego, certain areas down, in the suburbs, very expensive suburbs. There are all sorts of houses for sale, and nobody's buying. They're just waiting for the prices to go down. And a lot of people, who ordinarily would never lose their homes are losing their homes in this strange market we're in.
Well, over in Eagle, which is used to be a subdivision, now it's a suburb of Boise, relatively well-to-do little enclave, they have all these brand-new, well-appointed, luxuriously fitted-out homes that are lying empty. You have people in this very well-to-do enclave. By Californian standards, it's very modest. By Idaho standards, they're up there among the ultra-rich. Many of these people simply leaving the keys in their mailbox and abandoning their homes. And in the next month, they're going to have a big bus tour of all the foreclosed homes in the greater Boise area, all these homes that are up for foreclosure. They're calling it the foreclosure tour. They're going to have several of them where people will be invited at the expense of whatever consortium of realtors put this together. To take a bus tour. They'll be given meals, they'll be given entertainment, and they'll be taken on a grand tour to try to interest these people in buying up some of these foreclosed, repossessed homes. The Department of Housing and Urban Development has a program I just found out about in the last couple of days, because you're seeing in a lot of the HUD-owned homes in inner city areas and some of the larger urban centers, a process of gentrification in reverse, where these homes that are now being abandoned to foreclosure are becoming havens for squatters and crack dens, and they're bringing down the property values of the neighborhoods. HUD has a program akin to an urban homesteading approach, where they will sell these foreclosed homes to municipal governments for a dollar, and then the municipal governments are given a subsidy in order to provide a very steep price break, 50% or I believe a little bit more, for police officers and teachers and other officials to buy these homes, on the assumption that they have, I think, a three-year occupancy at the very least, on the assumption that they'll be going in as urban homesteaders, and sort of the same kind of mentality you had with the homesteading program in the mid-19th century. And it's just a really interesting thing where you're seeing this metastasizing cancer of foreclosure and debt and repossession, and then gentrification in reverse gentrification taking place all throughout the country in some of the least likely places. But these, once again, are portents of the direction that we're going because of the way we've been herded by the people who are running our economy. They've encouraged, they've abetted malinvestment, they've abetted the promiscuous use of consumer debt. I mean, we have people taking out huge loans, huge mortgage loans, to buy second and third homes as investments. I mean, that was a fairly large contributor to the late housing bubble, people buying homes as investments, buying and flipping or simply buying and holding them on the assumption that the market's always going to go up. That type of irrational behavior has to be encouraged by severely torqued incentives that, once again, are created by people who are running our economy. We've not had a free economy. In a genuinely free economy with sound money and minimal government intervention, this sort of thing would never happen. And now it's all shaking out. The best thing that could happen right now is if we would let the system collapse to its natural level. Work out the malinvestments, work out the clusters of errors, let some of the big debt-ridden concerns go out of business. For instance, the Carlyle Fund is going belly up. They've got a $500 million margin call that they can't make. The Carlyle Group's investment arm going under would be a wonderful thing to see, because that, once again, is sort of the boutique lobbying investment group for the military-industrial complex, where the Bush family is deeply implicated and people of that ilk. People who are spooked up, CIA assets are all involved in Carlyle. They've got this huge margin call. Let them sink. That'd be wonderful. Granted, it'd wreak havoc in the bond market for a while, but absorb that loss. Let these people get off on their own hook. Instead, we see the Fed debasing the currency, stealing from our earnings and our savings in order to subsidize these people. And as a result, things are going to be a lot worse for a lot more of us. The people in the protected classes will manage to weather the storm okay. The rest of us will be left adrift on whatever spar we can cling to. But I think, once again, if people are prudent here, if they're willing to take prudent action on the basis of rational alarm and think in terms of how best to protect their families with respect to what you need as opposed to what you want with your wildest desires, I think we can get through this okay.
Well, yeah, it's very interesting to see what's happening to the hedge funds. This guy's Carlyle Management was certainly almost like a hedge fund. But many of these hedge funds, some of these hedge funds, you'd have to put up $1 million. Sometimes you'd have to put up $10 million just to get into them. And a lot of these, they simply are going right down. They're losing money. They're not allowing the people to take their money out. And they're going to have to liquidate. And they're going to be literally hundreds of billions of dollars that are lost in those hedge funds.
Yeah, and once again, the you have two pretty unpalatable alternatives. You can either take the pain of the shakeout, or you can take the much infinitely worse pain of seeing the value of our currency completely destroyed. Well, in a way, our currency doesn't have any value to destroy. We're just dealing once again, as you would say, Dr. Stan, with the reality rather than the illusion. The dollar has been an illusion since it was completely severed, completely decoupled from gold. It was largely illusory until late 1971, and Nixon created a perfectly illusory unit of exchange by decoupling it entirely from gold. And it's taken more than a generation, but now we're seeing the disillusionment setting in with this mirage that is the dollar, this monetary mirage. And I think that could be a healthy thing if it would prod us in the direction of a sound money economy. Unfortunately, I think that too many people, and particularly those in the power elite who are profiters, you know, they're profiteers off of this situation. Too many people are willing to cling to the illusion at the expense of what it's going to do to our entire society.
My guest has been William Grigg, and of course it was August 15th, 1971, when President Nixon temporarily closed the gold window, and they've never opened it again. And that's one reason we're in the trouble we are. We're in a fiat money system, and they always collapse. William, look forward to talking to you tomorrow night. God bless.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case it's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself. Well, Dr. Stan, back here. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with William Greig. I always do. Fascinating intellect and does a great, great job. Now, if you want to know what's really going on, why, let me suggest my talk on the financial tsunami. It's on available on DVD, video, or certainly you can go ahead and get the syllabus that goes with that. We recommend you get the syllabus so you really understand all of these terms that they throw around, like M1, M2, M3. You'll know where the gold really is, and certainly you'll begin to understand what is going on. That is, of course, the financial tsunami, the DVD, video, and, of course, the syllabus. Then, of course, we now have available The Creature from Jekyll Island, the excellent book by Ed Griffin. It's the best single book that's out there. We have my pamphlets on the financial meltdown and the history of money. They're inexpensive and give you a tremendous amount of information. We carry the book The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, and then the book The Fiat Money Inflation in France. And we recommend these. We recommend them to you very strongly. Now, we do carry something put out by our good friend Pastor Chuck Baldwin called the Freedom Documents, and it's all the documents that have to do with the foundation of America. And there's about 40 of them, from the Mayflower Compact, through the farewell address of George Washington, and the Gettysburg Address, and the Declaration of Independence, and the various documents that having to do with the formation of our states, but the documents that had to do with the foundation of America. And Chuck put them all together into one book, and it is available to Radio Liberty. It's simply called The Freedom Documents, something I keep by my side all the time, and you'll want to do the same thing. Then, of course, we've got a great new DVD. It's called The Planned Police State. And ladies and gentlemen, there is a planned police state, and you'll really want to have this, and you'll want to get it to other people. Let them understand that everything is in place. We have a four-tape set on concentration camps. We have a DVD called America Behind Barbed Wire. And then, of course, we have the concentration camp special, which has all sorts of videos and DVDs and material in it, the information you need to have as you talk to other people and try to convince them there really is a plan to suspend the Constitution and round up Americans and put them into concentration camps. It's not imaginary. It's very real, because there are people out there who hate freedom. And your job is to help us get the information out as rapidly as we can. That's the concentration camp four-tape set. The video entitled America Behind Barbed Wire. And, of course, comes in DVD as well. And then, of course, you can get the concentration camp special, which has both of those items and a great deal more. And then, of course, we certainly want to remind you about the new four-tape or four-CD set we have on Alzheimer's disease. Probably every one of you knows somebody who has this terrible, terrible malady, and you have to understand it's increasing, and it's increasing very rapidly, and is not increasing rapidly just by accident. They're poisoning our elderly people. Why? Why? Because, of course, they're useless eaters in large part, and you really want to get this four-tape or four-CD set on Alzheimer's disease, because there are things that you can do if you have a loved one. We may not be able to reverse it, but we can keep it from progressing. Why, of course, we'll be able to preserve their lives. And then we, of course, have our four-CD set on the Bilderbergers. And then, of course, we also have the DVD on the Bilderbergers put out by Alex Jones, The End Game. We have two books on the Bilderbergers, The Bilderbergers and Bilderberger Diary. You need to get this information, and then to understand the spiritual force that energizes them, Satanic Crimes. The book, the four-tape or four-CD set, or get them both together. Understand that there really is evil, organized evil out there, and it's working at the highest levels of our government, at the Bilderbergers and the CFR and the Trilateral Commission and the Club of Rome and so many other organizations. You want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to get the DVD, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And certainly if you get them in bulk, why, you get it at a much better price. And then help us get the word out. You want to get my talk on The Forbidden Secret. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this next hour, they're going to be the views of Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. Good to be with you.
Well, what are we going to talk about this afternoon?
Well, we're going to talk about the economy.
All right. Well, I think that's a very, very good subject, because everybody should be concerned about this economy and the fact that we're facing very, very difficult times.
Well, what I'm going to try to pull apart is why there are so many signs that the economy is still booming and inflating. I mean, if you'll notice how many people are still driving these SUVs and filling up and driving around and not even slowing down to save gas. You see the restaurants are packed every evening. The movie houses are packed. This certainly doesn't feel like a major recession. There's an awful lot of money still floating around in the real economy. And yet what we're seeing, which is my analysis, in these major catastrophic collapses is the speculative bubble economy and where those speculators have put trillions of dollars. And that's what's collapsing. I'm going to try to explain this week in the World Affairs Brief why there is a disconnect between this buck economy and the real economy. And generally, my theory is that, you know, when we were growing up, Dr. Stan, we lived more in a real economy, and even though they had fiat money, it still had some gold backing, and economies grew slowly. Relatively slowly. It took a while to get a business started. It took a while to get profits coming in. When you and I went to apply for a loan for a house, the bank would tell us whether or not they had any money to loan. Nowadays, especially during the mortgage boom days, when you go to the bank, it was never a matter of did they have any money. Never. They had an unlimited amount of money available to them. All you had to do was meet the qualifications and they could fund it. How could they do that? Because they had an open tap through Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or any number of other federal programs, or even private mortgage brokers who would broker that loan they would write as long as it met certain criteria on up the line, and they could sell that loan and get the money back in the bank and loan more money to another person. So these mortgage bankers would continue to generate loans, pass them on the line. Then they started to run out of buyers who qualified under the tough standards that they started out with. They started to lower the standards and lower and devise new financial instruments to allow people with no money down, with double or, you know, a couple of mortgages piggybacked with increasing higher interest rates to get into a house with nothing down. These became the subprime mortgages, which flooded the markets. But this is a different society that was created by fiat money, actually. And part of the fast growth that we've experienced with the dot-com boom and all of this thing is owing to the fact that we have created fiat money and channeled it through the economy. Usually it starts through the military-industrial complex and then starts to filter out through the economy that way. In part of the process over the years, executives started getting excessively gross compensations, and this has exacerbated the ballooning of the economy as they look for ways to park their money that they didn't need.
I mean, we're talking about, you know, executives get $100 or $200 million. I mean, that's just unbelievable amounts of money.
And no person could use that kind of money personally. They have to sit there and find ways to invest. And they're too impatient now to invest in the real economy. They want these monetary, high-value, speculative investments. And that's what I'm going to describe is this separate market, this world market for highly speculative investments.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a minute with Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. Joel, go right ahead.
We hear the phrase all too often.
Let me just interrupt you to our audience, if we have another audience here. This is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and he's going to be talking about the economy. He's going to be talking about these executives who've been getting $100 million a year or $200 million a year or golden parishes when they retired, or $300 or $400 million, and massive amounts of money in the hands of a relatively small number of people. And, of course, the question is, what are they going to do with the money? What do you do when you have that amount of money suddenly coming in? Joel, pick the story up there.
So what's happened is we've developed markets that have exacerbated the need, you know, for people with excessive salaries to dump their money in a place where they really don't have to worry about investing, that other people invest it for them and promise extremely high returns. And those returns, of course, had to go along with highly risky investments that were fast-growing investments. People wanted returns, you know, well above the normal 8%, which is the 7 to 8%, which is the average capitalized return on a normal business investment. People were getting 20 and 30 and 50 and 200% returns on stock options and other things from investing in the dot-com companies. And while this is not a rant against speculation per se, because there's very few ways economically and technically that we can distinguish between good speculation and bad speculation until after the fact, of course, after, you know, one collapses and the other produces results, we realize that one was good speculation and bad. But certainly there are people out there playing bets on the market that have no interest in investing in anything productive and are simply betting on the market. It's a huge gambling arena, and the derivatives market is, in fact, a $500 trillion market of gambling bets. Everything from the weather to stocks, forwards, options, any number of very sophisticated options that they can take out in derivatives, and this has become just a huge sinkhole.
And let me just repeat, $500 trillion. People can't imagine that. All the money in the world today is probably not over $45 or $50 trillion. And here you've got all these bets out there for up to $500 trillion. Boy, if that they don't pay off, there's going to be real problems.
Well, you know, this is what I'm analyzing in this week's brief, and it's very interesting because what's happened is, even with all this money being created, there's only so much that the business and industrial community can absorb that money and put it in production. It just takes time. There has been more money being created than can be absorbed into the actual business community, except in China, which is absorbing tremendous amounts.
Hold that thought, I guess, is Joel Skousen. Of course, we're talking about these massive amounts of money that are being invested in derivatives and other sorts of gambling, and massive amounts of money that are being invested in China and other countries throughout the world. And of course, these people have accumulated these fabulous salaries, you know, working for the corporations and have rewarded themselves. I remember when the fellow retired from the National Stock Exchange. He gave himself a bonus of $400 million dollars. Maybe that was Dow Jones. I can't remember. But some people thought that was a little exorbitant. But go right ahead, Joel.
Well, it certainly is exorbitant. A lot of those things were payoffs for managing the system of corruption that is involved in insider trading in the stock. You know, you'll notice this side note that some people get to trade after hours. Not you and me, Dr. Stan, but other people who have insider access. And some people get to trade in ways that are illegal, what we call insider trading. But, you know, there's one set of rules for the little guy and another set of rules for the insiders. But what's happened here? There's been so much money flooding the economy that it has not been able to have to be able to work into the economy productively. You know, when you send it over to China, for example, you see a lot of malinvestment, investment in shoddy equipment, throwing up factories so quick, destroying houses, that a great deal of dislocation occurs within the economy that is very unwise and unhelpful both to the environment and to the individuals that get displaced by that kind of an economy. And so what has happened is that people have just gone into these speculative investments. For example, a lot of people don't realize that the forex markets or foreign exchange markets daily exceed $3 trillion, Dr. Stan. That means every day there's more trading on the forex markets, currency markets, than there is in the entire year's budget of the United States of America. Now that shows you, and the forex market is only a portion of the market. I mean, this is incredible, the amount of money floating around in what is a super reserve. Now, it is this reserve of capital and people's accrued excessive earnings that is collapsing. It is not necessarily directly connected to a collapse of the real economy, and that's why we see this disconnect of billions and trillions being lost. I mean, we aren't even counting the derivatives that are being lost, which is an unaccountable. There's no public requirement for stating derivative losses or even public tracking. This is only an estimate of $500 trillion, and it's conservative at that. But you see, that whole thing could collapse and not necessarily impact the economy directly, except as reserves are needed, and then all of a sudden there's no reserves because people, instead of putting into money into conservative reserves that have lasting value, have put into these pie-in-the-sky high-risk reserves, which are collapsing. So what we're seeing now is a shell game of trading bad reserves for other created reserves, and I'll go through this a little bit more detail. The bottom line result is that eventually we're going to have a lot more inflation, but right now the major direct result of this is a sinking dollar that is steadily going down. We hear the phrase all too often nowadays, the dollar sank to a new record low this week. Well, we need to get used to it. It's going to continue. It's a steady decline as the Fed continues to bail out the major banks and financial institutions, which are deeply involved in this great pocket of illusory reserves, which is collapsing. Solvency of these institutions depends on these package of paper assets which no longer have any verifiable value. You know, as the currency traders react to each new injection of liquidity and the lowering of U.S. interest rates, the dollar keeps losing value. It lost 1% this week alone, Dr. Stan, to the euro. It's gone down 6% in the past month, 17% in the last year, and a whopping 31% since the first part of 2006. I mean, that's an incredible loss. Now, the debasement of our currency is even worse than that, actually. The markets are comparing the dollar to the euro, the yen, or the British pound, or the Swiss franc. But each of those currencies are also being debased, but not quite as much as the dollar. Isn't that interesting? That they look like they're stronger, but they're actually devaluing their dollar, too. It's just that the dollar is devaluing so much faster that it makes the euro look stronger. It makes the British pound look stronger, even though they are inflating as well.
And I mean, the South. I was just going to say, what people have to understand is that the prices are really just going up through the roof. I mean, we're looking at here in California, certainly the best quality of gasoline, the 380 gallon, but everything points to the fact this is going up to $5, $8, $10 a gallon. People can't understand. They have no concept of what this would do, you know, to the very structure of our economy, and certainly the price of wheat and soybeans and rice and all the basic products are reaching new highs almost every day.
Well, and the problem is we have structured, our infrastructure in this country is built around the suburban commute. And so to a certain extent, people have no choice but to keep filling that tank, otherwise they can't get to work. And it's not exactly economically viable, even at $4 a gallon, to dump a vehicle that you just bought for $30,000 or $40,000 and get into a small economy car, because there's hardly any market for these big gas-guzzling SUVs. If you try to sell them on the used marketplace, it's collapsing fast for gas-guzzling vehicles. Your hybrid vehicles like the Toyota Prius are selling like hotcakes. Volkswagen TDI diesels were selling on hotcakes until they stopped importing them for a year while they resume production at the new, because of California extreme, I would say, just plain extreme, clean fuel requirements for diesel. It's hurting the trucking industry. Last month, one trucker reported that he spent $64,000 on fuel and had less than 10% gross profit on everything, of which to take out his truck payment and everything else. They're squeezing the independent trucker out of the market because freight rates are not rising as fast as the cost of oil is rising. Now, the primary reason why oil is now rising despite increasing supplies, and I'll repeat that, oil prices initially fell a week or so ago after the Energy Department said crude and gasoline supplies rose by unexpectedly large amounts last week. But then they returned to the record-setting streak as they briefly surpassed $110 a barrel. The reason for this, that's a very important point, the first time we've seen this happen ever, is that when oil rises despite increasing supply, it's because it has become a commodity store of value for currency traders trying to hedge against the falling dollar. So in other words, oil's become like gold and silver as a hedge against the falling dollar, and that's why you have more people joining in these oil auctions that have nothing to do with the oil markets. They're simply parking money there in something that's got a guaranteed return. So speculators are joining with oil traders to find a place to park their excess dollars, causing a price rise unrelated to actual oil supply and demand, and this is going to continue. It's going to be catastrophic because the more money you milk out of the consumer to pay for gasoline, the less he has to spend at any given moment on other things, and that's why consumer spending is growing very, very negative, because more and more people are spending their hard-earned dollars on gasoline and diesel products rather than on things they normally buy. Nevertheless, the restaurants are still full. I don't quite understand it, except that this is probably a fairly selective recession. And some people still have it, and other people are getting squeezed.
Well, I think it's only a matter of time, though, before the vast majority of the American people are squeezed. But right now, I don't think they're feeling it, or they may be still, trying to, to live on their home equity. I know people who are actually living on their home equity and absolutely refuse to lower their living standards. Well, the day of reckoning is going to come, Joel. There's just no way around that.
Well, it's going to come, of course, first for a lot of the high rollers. I mean, major financial institutions are collapsing, even though only a few, like Countrywide, have reached the state of publicly admitting default. This week, another huge insider-connected fund is going under. Carlyle Capital Group has not been able to reach an agreement with Deutsche Bank and J.P. Morgan Chase to refinance Carlyle's highly leveraged debt of $21 billion. Carlyle's creditors have made margin calls against Carlyle's highly leveraged positions and are now seizing its assets, which are mostly subprime debt, and putting them up for auction. Good luck in trying to sell that. Well, the Carlyle Fund, of course, is owned by the powerful insider-connected Carlyle Group that owns or controls many dark-side mercenary operations on behalf of the U.S. government. So this is a real insider corporate head. If even the insiders can't save their own, it's really getting bad, Dr. Sam.
Well, I'm sure it is getting bad. In fact, a number of hedge funds have actually gone down. They certainly, Bear Stearns lost a couple of theirs, and so many of the privately owned hedge funds, these are organizations where it takes $1 million or $5 million or $10 million before they'll even talk to you and let you in. And the trouble is that the people put their money in, they were making 15%, 20%, 30% a year, and now of course they're losing money and they can't get their money out. And I think it's a pretty bleak future for a lot of those people who put big bucks into the hedge funds because they knew they were going to make a fortune in them.
Yes, and Bear Stearns itself is in trouble.
Right.
So, you know, the Carlyle Group is somewhat immune as typical insider organizations. They've now moved offshore. They're a corporation registered in the Guernsey Islands in the UK, and they trade, their stock trades in Amsterdam. But, you know, let's address the latest multi-billion dollar plan by the Fed designed to stave off these growing defaults.
And, of course, they're going to just keep pouring money out and pouring money out. And the problem is that it is not a matter of liquidity. There's all sorts of money out there. It's a matter of solvency. And so many of our banks are frankly insolvent. In fact, Ben Bernanke testifying, I think it was the 27th of February, before the Senate Banking Committee, said a number of banks are going to go under. He said the smaller banks. He didn't mention the larger banks, but... You know, this is just taken such a casual remark. A number of banks are going to go under. Well, we don't see banks going under in America. And if they do, why, where does it stop? And maybe it's not going to just be the smaller banks. We'll be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen here at Radio Liberty. You pick up the story there, Joel.
Well, we're talking about the latest Fed bailout, the one that... produced a whopping biggest one-day rise in the Dow of 416 basis points in a trading day, biggest rise since 5 years, and then it dropped off to nothing again the next day. I mean, the markets don't even know what to make of this. There was this euphoria when the Fed announced a new $200 billion program. And Gary North had some very interesting comments that I'll quote from. He said, you know, it is not a pure injection of new funds in the bank system. It's a loan of T-bills to top-bidding banks. The Fed program involves the loan of Treasury debt to the 20 primary dealers, who in turn will auction them off to hard-pressed banks. Now, let me explain that for a second. These 20 primary dealers are insider middlemen who get the privilege of making a percentage gain on all of these transfers. Now, can you imagine what even a 0.5% of transferring $20 billion? There's absolutely no need for these middlemen. This is one of the huge favors the Fed is capable of bestowing upon trusted inner circle people connected to key brokerage firms that help the Fed manipulate markets at key times like this. They simply name and said, okay, you get to be, you know, a T-bill dealer or broker to the other banks, and you collect these huge premiums. These people make themselves instant millionaires overnight. Well, these assets, of course, T-bills, are very liquid. The banks supposedly get to unload now AAA debt certificates back to the Fed. Gary North says this public statement by the Fed is very deceptive. The new program is intended, says the Fed, to promote liquidity in the financing markets for Treasury and other collateral, and thus to foster the functioning of financial markets more generally. There is no need for liquidity debt, says Gary. Why is there a need for AAA-rated debt liquidity? It's because AAA ratings are nonsense, and everybody knows this. The ratings agency are no longer trusted by the capital markets. This is very bad news, yet disguised here. In other words, the Fed is not admitting that the reason this is all out, that they are allowing the banks to trade in this AAA debt, is because it isn't AAA anymore. Gary North asks, so is this inflationary? Now, this is very interesting. He says, no. The Fed transfers ownership of its assets, Treasury bills, and receives AAA, ha ha ha, Gary says, collateral back to the Fed. There's no net creation of funds. The monetary base stays the same. Now, here's why I disagree with Gary. The monetary base only stays the same for the amount of T-bills that the Fed has in stock. But nobody in their right mind thinks that $200 billion is even going to touch the tip of this iceberg. In other words, only as long, once they start to create new T-bills in order to trade to the banks for this defaulting debt, then it is becoming inflationary. All T-bills are products of monetary inflation at the time that they are created. An expert all agree that $200 billion is only the beginning. private economists who are reconstructing the suppressed M3 monetary figure say it's increasing at 8 to 10%, and that rate is also increasing itself. So the Fed is increasing the money supply, and that doesn't even include the off the or under the table stuff that we don't even have public figures on.
And of course, M3 is really what Joe refers to, that is the actual, all the money and credit, the entire money and credit out there. But there are a lot of people who think it's a lot higher than, 8 to 10%. We'll be right there. And our guest is Joel Skousen. Pick the story up, Joel.
Well, and that's why the Fed stopped producing M3 monetary figures, because they didn't want to see people to be able to track how much monetary inflation there is. You know, in addition, if this weren't enough, the $200 billion program bailout of the banking institution, the Federal Open Market Committee has authorized increases in its existing temporary reciprocal currency arrangements. These are called swap lines with the European Central Bank and the Swiss National Bank. These arrangements will now provide dollars in the amount of up to $30 billion to the European Central Bank and the Swiss Bank, respectively, each representing an increase of $10 billion to what they're normally been giving them. The Federal Open Market Committee extended the term of the swap line through September 30th of this year. Now, Gary North says this is chump change. The capital losses vastly exceed this. This is true, but this new line of credit to the Europeans establishes a process that will inevitably expand. So it's not just chump change right now. It'll become real money after a few trillion. And I'll cover a little bit later in a briefing here of how this affects European money markets, because it really does. Now, the actions announced by the Fed supplement the measures taken by the Federal Reserve on Friday to boost term auction facilities. Term auction facilities are these similar program of $100 billion that's being traded out to various banks internationally. This was something announced a couple of months ago that I covered in the World Affairs Brief. They didn't then mention that they were actually deliberately going to accept as collateral subprime mortgages, but everybody assumed that they were. And that's why this new one that they've announced today of $200 billion really isn't anything new. It is, in fact, just an extension of the term auction facility they've been doing for a couple of months. What it does say is that the amount of money they're having to throw at these banks in these swaps is increasing exponentially. It was $100 billion in 2 months, and now it's $200 billion now for this month.
And, of course, all this is highly inflationary. I mean, you just keep expanding and expanding and expanding the money supply, and that is what leads to the inflation.
Well, ultimately, yes. But what it's really doing now is hammering the dollar. It takes a while for inflation to work its way into the economy, and the dollar is going down far faster than inflation is continuing. But it's like a pump. Is that as that dollar goes down, there will become more and more inflationary forces into the country. For example, one of the effects in Europe is that Europe, holding large blocks of dollars, now has to unload them on the United States, and they're willing to buy more American products now. So the export, those that are creating products for export within the United States, are having a booming time. Those that depend on importing products from Europe are having a tough time. For example, car manufacturers are now having to face increases, dramatic increases in prices of cars that they're importing from Japan in Europe. The problem is the market won't tolerate much higher prices for vehicles unless the amount of vehicles sold declines. So what the Europeans are doing, and Volkswagen America and Mercedes and BMW are having to cut their profits by absorbing the dollar losses because they can't raise their prices much more than what they have without destroying their market. And the same thing with the Japanese. They're having to absorb the loss in dollar value and still sell the vehicles for the same dollar price here in America, and they're taking a hit. They can't keep doing that very much longer because they're getting close to the point where they're not making any profit by selling in America. So either we're going to see a decline in the number of cars sold here in America or be willing to provide, or the price is going to rise.
Well, of course, we've seen General Motors and Ford both taking tremendous losses over the last couple of years. I mean, we're talking about, I forgot what it was for GM, but, you know, $10, $20 billion last year. Ford, at least $10 billion. I mean, you can't keep, you know, producing cars and losing money every year. Sooner or later, you get into trouble.
Well, that's right. And of course, a lot of that trouble is because of two things: the predominance of big, high gas-guzzling vehicles that the American companies have produced, slow to get to the market on the very small vehicles, plus the legacy costs of all the health care costs that they, and pension costs that these companies promised years ago to the unions.
Well, of course, General Motors is trying to get out from under their promise for pensions and health care costs. They're talking about $200 billion they're going to give the unions just to pick up their expenses. $200 billion to get out from underneath their contractual obligations? That, you know, $200 billion here, $200 billion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen. America is facing the greatest financial catastrophe of your lifetime, even probably greater than the financial catastrophe of the Great Depression in the 1930s. Most people are unaware of it, but believe me, the other side pretty knows what's happening. Well, Joel, you picked the story up there.
Well, in summary, what I'm making the case for is that most of the bad news in the economy still only pertains to the speculative sector, this huge and too big sector that has been needing major surgery, and it is deflating. But that deflation of the speculative sector does not mean necessary deflation in the consumer sector, which we see with record price increases. But we're seeing deflation of the trillions of dollars of reserves that people, the big institutions and high rollers have stored in the speculative money and markets and derivative markets, and we're seeing inflation against the consumer here. Now, most of the Fed's intervention is to bail out these large financial institutions, which helped create this latest bubble, of course, in collusion with easy money from the U.S. Treasury. I think that a partial collapse of the speculative market is inevitable, but it takes much less liquidity injections to keep the real economy going. Housing is already adjusting. Builders are tightening, laying off people. Many of those people being laid off are now freelancing or doing remodeling projects at lower wages. Others are switching to other jobs and likewise making do. Billions are being lost by those who speculated in these big markets. They are mostly the high rollers that are being hit, and that doesn't mean that the fall of the real economy is a necessary evil that will occur. I still believe that the Fed shows every sign of pumping in whatever money will take. The inevitable problem is that with all the belt tightening, we're still going to face a great deal of inflation because of the falling dollar. And so you can't have it both ways. You can't bail out the economy with more money, with more inflation, without destroying the value of the dollar and causing severe hardship. Those that will survive in this are those that can command a higher price, that can inflate along with this, either by having investments in housing that will once again boom. I mean, even though housing has gone down, I think, almost 20% in California on average, still the houses are way overpriced. I mean, I was visiting a family down in San Diego in a modest area, and there wasn't a single home under $1 million, and these are just little tin shacks.
No, and certainly this is true in where I live. You know, the average home cost is over $700,000.
So it doesn't matter too much if they've gone down 20%. Even at $600,000, these things are way overpriced. Now, the only problem, of course, is people that got in recently in those homes are being hit because the mortgage value exceeds what the actual declining value is of the home. But I still believe that, in fact, the powers that be are not going to allow the majority of people to suffer tremendously from this, from an actual depression.
Hold that thought. Inflationary recession. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel is saying that he doesn't think that the powers that be are going to allow the average individual to suffer too much in the coming financial contraction. Why is that?
I think it's because we're going to have an inflationary recession, much like we saw in the Carter years, when you had higher prices and yet declining jobs and other problems. And this is due strictly to monetary policy of the U.S. government, something that really can't be helped. But it's amazing, after having lived in South America for many years and seeing people deal with rates of inflation, get this, we're talking 300, 400, even as high as 1,000% a year, Dr. Stan. We haven't seen anything yet of what can, and people have survived that. So, Americans think they can't survive inflation, but they can. They will. People just don't give up and die. There will be a lot of maladjustment. A lot of people will lose value and lose homes and things. But people, and it will hurt and destroy much of the middle class, as what happened in South America. But it isn't completely the end of the world, and in fact, it's not quite as bad as the Depression, when there really weren't any jobs. The economy is much more has much more flexibility and the ability to adapt much more rapidly than the agrarian economy during the Depression years. So while I'm not giving the government a pass on this, I think that we will pass through this, and the powers to be, in my opinion, are very serious about making sure that people don't throw the rascals out. They'll continue to find one excuse or another to blame these crises on other than themselves. They want American people fat, dumb, and happy right up in the time where the real mother of all terrorism happens, another world war will come, and that's when the real problems hit us, and I think they want us fat, dumb, and happy up until then. So that's my basic prognosis. Big problem is inflation. We're going to have to live with inflation and a lot more of it to come, but not a collapse of the economy itself.
All right, fine. It's going to be interesting to see as this whole story plays out in the coming month, because I think probably within the next 2 years we're going to know pretty well what's going to happen. Well, somebody just called in and wanted to know if there was a country with a good solid currency that will stay that way, and I think they're thinking of trying to put some money into another country. Do you have any thoughts? Are there any countries in the world with a solid currency or would be wise to invest in?
Well, it's all relative. Of course, the Swiss have always had a great deal of solidity, and part of the reason is because they have insider connections to keep their country afloat. This is the banker's banking country. So no one's ever gone wrong by investing in the Swiss franc, but rather still think that gold and silver are better investments right here at home. That's their own hard money investment that will continue to rise in value.
Now, one of the things that has been brought up is the possibility of a two-tiered monetary system. In other words, someday we're going to wake up and they're going to say, well, you cannot take money out of the country nor bring money into the country without, of course, our authorization. Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't think so, Dr. Stan, just because of the size of the foreign exchange market. You put foreign exchange controls, this country actually is surviving on foreign use of those dollars, intermixing with our economy constantly at an increasing higher rate. I don't see any way in which they can separate the two.
Well, of course, what happens if the dollar keeps losing value? Aren't foreigners going to want to dump those dollars and get out of them?
Yes, but they can't dump it in large blocks. They have to dump it by buying American.
Right.
And so, they're going to be buying American companies, as we're already having, investing in failing institutions. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing this wholesale selling of America to foreign countries. And with that all, we're losing more and more control over these things. But I think we're going to see a boom economy of American exports, but a depression in terms of the travel industry is already hurting. The cruise ships are just in a continual sail mode now, trying to get people to take cruises. They're having to take it in their own profit margins, because they can't raise the prices too much higher, and yet all their costs in dollars are rising, especially in Europe. When you run cruise ships to Europe, the dollar isn't worth anything, but they can't keep charging most of the tourists, which are Americans, more money or they won't go. It's a catch-22 situation.
But I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. It's in the automotive industry. They're just going. I don't think they're going to sell anywhere near as many cars. Certainly in the housing industry, where the whole housing industry, new construction, is closing down. And selling homes certainly is increasingly difficult, even here in California, where we have a very, very desirable place to live. Okay, now do you want to go on to another subject?
Yes, I want to cover the demise of Elliot Spitzer. It really is a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on that people need to understand.
Sounds like a very, very deserving individual. So what would you like to tell us?
Well, let me start my commentary with the anomalies in this story. You know, almost everything we heard in the media is disinformation meant to cover up for what really happened. The answer is, while most of the details of the story are true, they were actually facts gathered after the discovery and not before. The leaked details about the IRS notice that tipped off the government to his structuring certain transactions below $10,000 actually was leaked to the press and meant to cover up the fact the government is constantly spying on all public officials without a warrant. They get the warrants only when they decide they need to go to court for something and require a fig leaf of legitimacy. Now, you know, this practice goes clear back to J. Edgar Hoover days. He used the FBI powers to spy on his enemies in Congress, the Department of Justice, and the White House to keep them from firing. You know, Hoover was a legitimate anti-communist who was hated by the leftist liberals within the government. The government, in turn, used the CIA to spy on J. Edgar Hoover, who had maintained a homosexual lifestyle. They used that photographic evidence to keep Hoover silent about certain dark side operations, like the JFK, RFK, and MLK assassinations. Hoover had agents and had information linking the government to those assassinations, but he kept it undercover because I believe that they had blackmailing evidence against him. Now, the government also keeps tabs on all members of Congress as well as federal and state judges. The evidence of corruption and personal indiscretions that these people are involved in are useful in coercing these public officials to do the bidding of the power elite, and in many cases to bring them actually inside the dark side system. Many a judge has been turned by spying on their extracurricular sexual activities. However, Elliot Spitzer was already on the dark side. Why was he exposed rather than protected? He carried water for the establishment and pushing for driver's licenses for illegal aliens, attempting to make New York a safe haven for illegals. He'd also gone to great efforts to establish a, quote, conservative crime-fighting credential as a prosecutor, going after political corruption and prostitution rings, of all things. Of course, that was just a ruse. Like Rudolph Giuliani, people on the dark side make a point of playing the role of honest crime fighters so they can rise politically. And eventually it becomes obvious that these zealously liberal but morally corrupt conservatives are hypocrites. Spitzer not only used hookers regularly, but put out over $80,000 a year for, quote, the best. And that's not only hypocritical, but bordering on an uncontrolled fetish. Well, there are signs that the outing of the New York governor is contrary to how high public figures are normally protected. Most commentators on the left have taken the view that this was the Bush administration taking out a high-profile future Democratic competitor. But that doesn't wash in my book. The powers that be control both parties, and there isn't any true competition between them at the highest levels. The bosom-buddy relationship, of course, between the Bushes and the Clintons tend to confirm this. But first, in dealing with someone the powers that be want to protect, any questions posed by the media to government spokesmen or prosecutors are met with this standard phrase: I am not allowed to comment. There is an ongoing investigation. How many times have you heard that in the press?
Very frequently.
How is it then that the government has leaked almost every detail about the Spitzer scandal without restraint, from the supposed bank tipping off the IRS for a structured transaction to the name of the call girl? If this were a terror investigation, they'd be telling us they can't reveal any secrets about how the information was gathered, lest the mythical Al-Qaeda somehow learn about our surveillance methods, as if they didn't already know. Yet, as in this case, the prosecutors even tell details about the warrant, its expiration date, and the subsequent renewal. as well as the volumes of wiretaps that went down, almost as if they're trying too hard to convince us that the legalities were all followed. Now, if this sounds suspicious in light of the current warrantless wiretapping of all Americans, it is. Secondly, the government claim that it has a hard time cracking down on prostitution is very suspect. This group maintained an open website for all to see. How hard is that to send in an undercover cop and shut the thing down? There are dozens of other rings still operating near the halls of power in plain sight. They are even listed in the newspaper articles about the Spitzer scandal. Why aren't these being shut down? It is because these high-priced exclusive call girl rings cater to government officials and other high rollers who have immunity. And that's why the police look the other way. But something went wrong for Spitzer. There are hundreds of other politically connected wealthy people on those client lists. Now, this is very interesting. Spitzer was labeled client number 9. That means there were clients 1 through 8 and 10 through how many? Who knows? 99. Why was only Spitzer labeled and made an example? And why not clients 1 through 8? Obviously, Spitzer got on the wrong side of someone, and it wasn't for doing the right thing. Now, I don't have the specific answer to the question I'm asking. The politicians who rise to political power via the public prosecutor route often are privy to a lot of secret government wiretaps that give them great leverage over others within their own dark side who are being protected. Now, Spitzer's known to be very politically ambitious. I'm supposing that he might well have made a move to undercut one of his future political competitors with some juicy piece of blackmail that he got while he was a prosecutor. That competitor may well have had more clout with the real powers to be than even Spitzer had, and the word was given out to get Spitzer. Now, experts were shocked that a major rising star like Spitzer would be allowed to fall. Some even challenged and were quoted in Newsday as saying that Spitzer ought to stay and hang tough and tough it out like Bill Clinton did. He certainly could have. Men with worse reputations like cross-dresser Rudy Giuliani and gay pedophile Congressman Barney Frank showed that they can get elected time after time in spite of their creepy morals. So the public is hardly, of discerning moral taste. But when the media aligns itself with the powers that be and they call to demand Spitzer's resignation, he complied. I think probably mostly out of hope that he might get another chance someday if he doesn't buck the powers that be. They have a reputation to maintain, and they don't want to make it appear openly too often, as they have in this previous election, that they are supporting corrupt politicians. You know, they're having to support McCain, who's very, very corrupt. They're supporting Obama, who's very, very corrupt, who's had homosexual liaisons and has been enriched through insider training, trading, just like Hillary Clinton. From time to time, they need to take down one of the big boys to give the appearances that government really does work for the people, even though it's a lie.
Do you think that's why they took Spitzer down, or do you think it was that he just he was a threat to somebody?
Well, I don't know the reason I'm saying that. I don't know the specifics, but I'm fully convinced that Spitzer was an insider. And for them to take down someone who was a rising star like this, there had to be something going on in the inner circles where Spitzer crossed somebody. And this happens in mafia circles all the time. You get too ambushious and you start undercutting somebody who has a lot of clout, and they can come back to bite you. But we might find out someday. I think it is fairly likely that someone like Spitzer may be resurrected someday. I mean, even someone like Newt Gingrich, discredited person on the phony right-wing side of the spectrum, who really wasn't right-wing, he was left-wing, who was pretending to be right-wing, he's still hoping for a comeback after his immorality gig and betraying his wife and conservatives combined. He's made his play to set himself up for to be resurrected again. I think we haven't seen the last of Newt Gingrich, and I don't think we've seen the last of Spitzer.
I think it's amazing how they were able to rehabilitate Bill Clinton after he lied and all the things that he did when he was the president, and then we saw how they were able to rehabilitate Richard Nixon You know, and he leaves in disgrace, and they bring him back, and suddenly he's sort of a hero before he dies. And so they can play games with our minds. They control the media. They control our emotions. They control what we think and how we feel. And maybe they'll bring Spitzer back again. You may very well be correct.
Well, my point, though, Dr. Stan, is that it's not that they control all of us. It's that they control, because we have so many unthinking people who get their cues from the media and who don't have a good sense of conscience and moral values. I mean, I was shocked at how much Bill Clinton is looked upon as a rock star. He just gets wonderful press wherever he goes and huge crowds of people. I mean, that's a very telling indictment on American morals when they can... Somebody who has been so totally discredited morally as this president and what he did in the Oval Office, you know, can be viewed without moral question by so many of our fellow Americans.
I agree with you totally.
The last topic is the Fallon resignation. You know, Admiral William Fallon hotly denies there was any difference between his foreign policy views on Iran and the president's. But the statement just isn't going to fly. It's one thing to be simply shunted out of his CENTCOM position and kicked upstairs to a desk job, but he was fired. You know, we military people know that anyone time a general officer requests early retirement means that he's being booted out. And to avoid embarrassment, he's being fired. A simple disagreement would have been settled with the reassignment, not for someone of Fallon's talent. He was definitely on the wrong side of the president and got booted out.
Well, what we hear is that he was against going into Iran. He wanted to get our troops out of Iraq. He wanted to try to reconstitute our army so we'd have some means of defense, because the army we have over there doesn't have the equipment. The men are certainly demoralized, and many of them are, and certainly there's no question at all that if we had another major catastrophe in the world, would it be hard-pressed to respond to it?
Indeed.
Go right ahead.
Well, it's my analysis that we are closer to war with Iran now, with Fox Fallon removed. This was a very sharp person. He just talked out of turn too many times, and it gives a very not-so-subtle signal to the rest of the general officers. This is what happens when you buck the president's policy. You know, people like Petraeus are being rewarded because he's an absolute yes man. And Fallon, you know, was getting away with the appearance of challenging his commander-in-chief. And that's laudable. You know, young officers are looking for someone like Fallon who will stand up to the president. Yes,
we have to. Hold up. That. We'll be back in just a moment. Joel, go right ahead. We've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program, and you were just saying that, you know, young officers are looking for some leaders, real leaders there who will stand up for what's right and stand up for the armed forces, and most of them have just gone along to get along, and Fallon has had the courage to, you know, to say, you know, the policy is wrong, we should not go into Iran, we've got to get our troops out of Iraq, we've got to reconstitute our military.
That's right. He was standing up to the commander-in-chief, whom he thinks is contemplating a strategically unsound war, which he is. And Tom Shanker of the New York Times wrote, Admiral Fallon had wrangled senior officials of the Bush administration in recent months with comments that emphasized diplomacy over conflict in dealing with Iran, that endorsed further troops withdrawal. He was at loggerheads over Petraeus, who's just a yes-man for the administration. He wanted to... you know, if the surge is a success, then let's accelerate the troop withdrawals. But that's not what the administration is doing. The surge was used to simply placate the anti-war fever in America, and the U.S. now is delaying any troop withdrawals because they have no intention of doing so. They know that by delaying, we'll get a war with Iran started, and then there won't be any further justification or discussion about the withdrawing troops. Anyway, Fallon, even though he attempted to the very end to dissuade the public from believing that he was loggerheads with the administration, was, I believe, the critic.
Julia there?
Drew was trying to hide what he was doing.
All right. Well, I certainly I have a great deal of admiration for him. I'm sorry he was forced out, but I'm sure they will force out anybody who stands up and opposes their effort to go to war with Iran, which I think will be a disaster, and just I hope and pray it doesn't come about. But everything points in the direction that this is what the plan is.
It does indeed, Dr. Stan. So we'll have to wait and see.
All right.
I will keep everyone posted with my World Affairs brief as these events unfold in the country.
Well,
if anyone like a free issue, they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief, and I'll be happy to send out a free issue.
Once more, how do they do that?
They will. They can go to my website, worldaffairsbrief.com, and it explains how to email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com for a free sample to see if they'd like to subscribe to my newsletter.
Well, I apologize ordinarily. Of course, I try to get that information out early in the program, but I was so fascinated with your discourse that I just let that go by. Anyway, certainly the World Affairs Brief is a fascinating source of information. I go there certainly every morning with worldaffairsbrief.com, and of course I take the weekly report as well. Bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly let me commend Joel for putting out World Affairs Brief. Certainly every morning after I do my emails, I go to World Affairs Brief and scan down and look at all the various articles they have posted there. They do a great job. And then every Friday, of course, Joel actually puts out a report, and we cover that here superficially, but it's well worthwhile reading. And of course, there is a small subscription fee, but it's the least expensive of all the newsletters out there on the Internet, and I recommend it to you. And, of course, you can go to World Affairs Brief and get the details as to how to get in touch with Joel, and I'm sure he'll be glad to send you a free copy so that you can see what the information is, and hopefully you'll want, of course, to subscribe and support his efforts and his research. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every weekday, and then we have a weekend program that goes to about almost 30 stations. We're trying to get people to understand what's going on, and we are reaching people with the knowledge that we are involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Certainly we hope that many of you out there will want to, of course, get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the DVD by that title, and then, of course, our other talk. It's entitled The Forbidden Secret, because there is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years, talking about a time in the future when a great nation would lead the world into a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a one-world leader. And, of course, America is that nation. We are looked upon as the new Atlantis. We have a DVD, an excellent DVD, called The Atlantis Connection. If you want to get an understanding of who the new world leader is, you need to get Constance Cumby's talk she gave at our last conference. It's called The Emergence. Of course, that's the emergence of the world leader. Fascinating information. And, of course, if you don't know Constance, she's probably the world's expert on the New Age movement, on the occult movement, which is really the driving force behind everything going on in the world today. And you can get that in either 4-tape or 4-CD set. We recommend the tapes, my 4 interviews with Constance Cumby, which you could just ask for the Constance Cumby tapes. If you know somebody with Alzheimer's disease, and most of you do, you need to get our 4-tape or 4-CD set on Alzheimer's disease, because there are means of stopping the progression of the disease and perhaps even turning it back, but at least stopping the progression of this terrible disease. And, of course, the trouble is that this is exploding. The incidence has increased dramatically, and, of course, you'll understand why the incidence has increased dramatically when you listen to our 4-tape set. Then, of course, you need to get my talk on Nundare, Call It Genocide. That's Nundare, Call It Genocide. Another talk on planned population reduction. And then the talk on population control. There really is a plan out there to markedly limit the population of the world. There are people who have a different worldview. They believe that people are a cancer on the earth, and they want to kill off over 90% of the world's population. And if you'd like to see their monument, it's in Elberton, Georgia. There, and 4 great granite stones in 8 different languages, is the plan. And, of course, point number one is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. And in a world with over 6 billion people, they're talking about eliminating over 90% of the world's population. How would you do that? Why, with a nuclear war, with plagues of all sorts, and with all sorts of violence. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, there really are people who have a different worldview. Do you know that today in America the free, why, we have over 7 million Americans in prison, probation, or parole. There are over 2,300,000 people in prison today. Hey, Sydney, one in every 10...